Warning. My dad and Matt say bad words in this episode. Listener discretion is advised.
Get on with it.
Yes, get over it! Yeah!
I can hear myself when I'm loud, but not when I'm normal.
You're never normal.
Hush. Hush, you. Don't wear a chin.
It's been a while. I didn't do much explaining last episode, but suffice it to say, if you've been listening to the show, my little guy, who was born last October, has been having some health problems, and those have been persisting. The last episode where we covered Prey, I was at the Ronald McDonald House, recording there. Today, I am recording in the cab of my vehicle, and we have some missing hardware, so if things sound a little different on my end, that's why. Forgive us, we're working on it, things are packing, unpacking, and we just figured we'd rather get you the episode than to be fastidious about how we record the episode. So hopefully this sounds okay, but yeah, here we are. By the way, who are you?
I'm billionaire playboy Bruce Wayne.
And I am Elma Fudd, millionaire. I own a mansion and a yacht.
I guess, well, one of us always lies and one of us never tells the truth.
Wait, no, I remember this. If I ask you what I would answer, then, wait, no. No, if I dumped the 3 gallons into the 5 gallons and it was the block of ice under the guy and he slowly hung to death.
I had this all worked out. So one of us always lies, one of us always tells the truth. You ask one of them, would he tell me the truth? You ask him for feedback on the other one.
Well, I want to ask you some feedback on what you've been watching lately. This is a kind of series of mini episodes we're trying, and just for the sake of getting you guys a little more content. Lately, Matt, the discussion that's happening online, and although it's been a long time since we've checked in on what we've been watching, this week has been a big week for Disney. It was their big D23 Expo this week, unveiling all the new shit that's coming out and the big franchises. We got Star Wars news. We got Marvel news. We've got, I don't know, is there any other franchises anymore other than Star Wars and Marvel? Oh, I guess we have Willow to look forward to. That's coming. A new Willow TV series.
Which apparently is a linear sequel.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. And then we've also got a big franchise dropped on Prime that 2 weeks ago, continuing the Lord of the Rings saga.
I like to call it Loader.
So there is a lot going on in streaming television. I think people have very strong opinions about all of these.
Man, I don't care about people's strong opinion. Like, our opinions, of course, are gold.
Yes, you should pay attention to our opinions.
To be hearkened with. But, like, some of this stuff, like, I'm almost to the point where it's like, just, you know, fuck those people. Why do we even talk about them as much as we do? They're pure trash, you know?
You know, a theme I think is going to come up in many, many episodes to come is that as a new father of a child who is sometimes sick, I don't get to see a lot of stuff. I don't get to see a lot of TV series. As a result, I haven't watched Sandman yet, the Neil Gaiman adaptation on Netflix. But honestly, his reactions to some of the blowback on casting for Sandman, some of the blowback on casting for Lord of the Rings, Ring of Power, has really put things into perspective where I think a lot of the really bad noise that's being made about these series is a very small part of the audience. It's just getting a lot of attention because that's the most clickbaity headline. And as much as we'd like to live in an ideal world where people did not fall for clickbait, clickbait is clickbait for a reason, because it works. It's good bait and it gets clicks. And that's what makes the commerce of the internet work. And so I think there's a lot of attention being paid to a very loud minority.
That's what the very loud minority thinks. But I become kind of a digital Amish. Like, I just shun the people. It's like, you're not going to get them out of their mind prison, and they don't really matter. And the best thing to do is make them a footnote. It's almost like there's now a thing where you're getting out in front of the criticism before you even see the magnitude of it. Just deny them the power.
You know, honestly, that's where I'm at now. It's just, I don't care what these people think. I'm not going to change their mind. I don't need to engage with them. I don't need to go online and tell them what a bigot they are. They've heard it, and it doesn't make a difference. So why do these people get to live rent-free in my head? I'll just be sitting here with this cool new series, a brand new story being told in the Middle-earth Tolkienverse that I get to watch and that I'm enjoying. And if they don't watch it and get to enjoy it, you know, sorry for them, but, you know, I'll be over here with the good TV show. You guys have fun.
Yeah, like, just to wade into it for a minute, right? For one thing, it's fiction, guys. Like, The Witcher is not from Poland. Game of Thrones is not happening in Europe. Hobbits, to say the least, are not actually British. And the society that is putting the play on is not honor-bound to import the correct, air quotes, actors. That's something we've sometimes had the freedom to do for verisimilitude. And we get the bullshit wrong anyway. Like, when we make a Viking show, those guys didn't look like that dreamy guy that plays Ragnar Lothbrok. And they didn't sound like they were British either. They look like toothless, knuckle-dragging slobs, and they sounded like the Swedish chef. No offense to your Swedish ancestors out there. So, like nobody actually wants to watch an accurate show about the 800s, because it's just like a dirty dude in a tunic and he's just very gruesomely smashing people's head ends until he's smashing of head ends, and he's like, oh, I'm King Offa, king of all of Tealand. I'm in charge of all the crumpets now. No, like, we don't want the accuracy. So all the bitching about accuracy is just selective outrage. It's functionally nothing. It's like if they were doing Hamlet in China, you wouldn't expect them to import a bunch of Danes to get it right. Who knows? Who knows what J.R.R. Tolkien's heart was like? Maybe he did imagine every hobbit as Snowy White. It doesn't matter, because they're making the show with modern fucking people. Like, what's the line? Sometimes I hunt British vampires. There's black people in Europe now.
What?
You know, and there were in Tolkien's time. And so if they just want to do the show with those people, that's fine. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. If you're like, oh, well, I don't know, I can't really relate to this show because all the people look different for me. I don't know. There's no one just like me. Where's the Juan Rico for me to empathize with? That's a Starship Troopers joke. Then you should reflect on that. You should ask yourself, why is it unpleasant not to be perfectly represented by the protagonist in every fucking show?
You're so close to getting it.
Anyway.
You know, and at the end of the day, Ishmael Cruz Cordova, Sophia Nomvet, like, these are, they're good performers. They're turning in good roles. And if I'm just going to be really frank, if you care as an adult, and especially, like, guys, if you're like Matt and I, if you are a white, middle-aged male, and you have super strong feelings about what color Ariel the mermaid is, sit down with yourself and ask some searching questions about why. Unpack that.
If that ruins the reality of the story for you, maybe you should be slightly concerned that she's half fucking fish. I don't know. I've always pictured the mermaid's lower half as more of a skipjack or a bluefin, and it shouldn't be really iridescent green. That's how fucking dumb it is.
You want to talk about not following the source material? Read Hans Christian Andersen's The Little Mermaid. Disney didn't follow that story. They broke with the original intent of the author, and it's a beloved classic. It's an adaptation, people. They happen all the time. Orson Welles did Julius Caesar set in fascist Europe, and nobody was they didn't look like actual Romans.
Most of the Grimm's fairy tales would be rated R if they were just unredacted in their adaption, you know? Have you seen the Big Joel, the YouTuber, the video about his 300 tweet?
No.
So he's this guy that he just does pop culture analysis on movies and stuff. And he tweeted, I rewatched 300 the other day, and it's amazing how that, like, in 2000, whatever, we all just really liked a piece of low-key Nazi propaganda. Or, excuse me, fascist, I believe is what he said. So he gets like bombed by all these people. He's like, look, I'm not saying I'm not even saying I didn't like it. I'm not saying I don't like it now. It's dope. But if you want to talk about it, let's talk about it. You know, kind of, it's literally kind of fascist. Like, the democracy is decadent. The decisive king takes over and does what needs done. It's a nationalist folktale about the danger posed by swarthy outsiders. Like, it's actually kind of there in the text, right?
Right.
But he gets into how, like, the number one response to his twatter about it was that many, many people literally said, it can't be about Nazis. It's not set in World War II. like he's like, when you become a public figure, you get to find out that there's literally probably 15% of the fan base does not understand that allegory is possible. This is gonna be a weird record, man. I don't know. I'm pent up.
Well, tell me. Let's just hop on to Rings of Power. I've seen two episodes of this out of the three that are available as of this record. There will probably be four out by the time this comes out.
We thought the war, at last, was ended.
Today, our days of peace begin.
We thought our joys would be unending. We thought our light would never dim.
The skies are strange.
It is here, Galadriel, the moment we feared.
Evil does not sleep. It waits.
Beyond the darkness, tempting shadow to bury us all beneath the mountain.
He has not one name, but many.
Have you heard of him, lad? Have you heard of Sauron?
Is left unchecked, it will take us all. Find the light, and the shadow will not find you.
But how is it leaving you? You're a little more well read on Tolkien than I am, but or at least I assume. I don't know that for a fact, actually.
So I'm not like a super extended Tolkien reader. I haven't actually ever read the Cimmerillion.
Sure.
The Sims colon Middle Earth, whatever. Cimmerillion. I haven't actually ever gotten into some of that extended and posthumous stuff, you know, the sort of Tolkien ECU, as it were. But I mean, I'm liking the show. I do have the... Okay. I do not like the Hobbit take on the demi-humans. Okay? I don't like the dwarves are not taking seriously. Like you know how in Lord of the Rings they miniaturized Gimli, but they did so like in scale,
right?
And he looked like a short, and this one, it's like they can't decide if they want the animated show dwarves or that, and so like the dwarves have some weird purport, like they have big dwarf bulbous noses, like big drinkers' noses, and big chins and foreheads. And weirdly big hands, but they have stumpy legs, but not stumpy arms. It's like they couldn't figure out how to shrink them, right? But that's not a complaint with the series, because I hated that about the Hobbit movies, too. I thought they actually did the dwarves better in the older ones. And then the elves have the problem to me, and this is a unique problem to me, and if you want to skip like 30 seconds so you don't have to unhear it, folks at home, they look like they're from the 70s space opera, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, Marvel Shi'ar Captain Marvel universe. Like they're wearing like sashes and little man skirts, and they look like they're Uatu the Watcher when he was young and had hair. That's how all the elves look. I actually really like the she's Durin's wife, the character that started the ruckus.
Well, one of them,
she's
yeah.
a neat character, and she adds a bunch of, she grows the dwarven mind by, like, going down and harmonizing the chanting of the dwarves in the deep, And that tells them where to mine and where not to mine, and helps them sort of make their way through the rocks in the dark. And that's a neat conceit. The young Galadriel is pretty cool. They eventually get to Numenor, and Numenor is a very good set piece.
I will say, there are some damn attractive elves in this series.
Are there? Like, I think they got some weird-looking guys playing elves, man. They don't look like elves to me. They look like people with cosplay ears on. And it's not that the cosplay ears, it's not that the cosplay ears are badly done. That's not what I mean. Like the ears themselves, like the effects are fine. What I'm saying is that like the elves just look like people to the point that they make a device of the fact that they could just like cover their ears and walk around. And I think the elves should be like extraordinary. The elves should stick out like sore thumbs, like Gal Gadot and Wonder Woman, where it's like patently obvious that this is not going to be a humble person with a normal life.
I will say that Galadriel and Elrond, anytime they're on screen, all I can think of is, oh, that's Kate Hudson and Neil Patrick Harris. Neither of which is true.
That's a strong factor as well. And it's not like, what's his name that plays Elrond at Agent Smith?
Hugo Weaving.
Priscilla? Yeah. It's not like Hugo Weaving is like a drop dead dime or anything, right? But he had an arrogance to him. And the only person that really carries themselves like that in the show is Galadriel. She's the only one that really acts like an elf and pulls it off. The rest of them are just kind of dudes being dudes, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like the aesthetic is just ever so slightly missed for me. I'll tell you, the one thing does bother me about both this and the new Game of Thrones show. They're set a ways before what we've already seen, but they're not set back in the beginning. So, right. Like, everything's really old in Game of Thrones, and everything's really old in Lord of the Rings. And then in Rings of Power and House of the Dragon, everything that was 15,000 years old in Lord of the Rings and 15,000 years old in Game of Thrones is now 9,800 years old. And so it's like, yeah, it's Numenor, but it's not high Numenor. It's not like way back in the when Tom Bombadil just had downy fuzz upon his cheeks, right?
Do Tom Bombadil, you cowards.
So it's like, it's a prequel, but it's not like a sea change. It's not really like, oh, this is really what this was like when this stuff was all young and new and fresh and before they had a constant evil threat or whatever. I don't know. They could have gone farther back. They could have shown us like Harfoots are cool, but I want to see like a hobbit that hasn't evolved out of a beaver yet. Hashtag hobbits from beavers. Look it up. Do your own research. Hobbits evolve from beavers.
I am not super well read on Tolkien either, or Tolkien, I guess. And I even just recently read the unabridged Lord of the Rings and Hobbit over the last couple of years. Turns out that the versions I had read when I was younger had to have been abridged, because there's a bunch of shit in there I don't remember, or that I glanced through or didn't read. I don't know what happened. But on this most recent read through, I was like, oh yeah, there's a lot of shit here I didn't know. Oh man. And so my understanding is that this show is taking place in the second of the four ages of Middle Earth. And this is the one that the least is really written about, so it has the most room for Hollywood writers to get in there and play around. There's a lot of people who are like, well, I don't know, this isn't the story I had in my head, which is a lot of the stuff we hear around Star Wars. But I'm liking what I see. Everything feels interesting and fun. It doesn't seem too inside. It's not like a deep cuts Lord of the Rings show for Lord of the Rings fans. This is fairly accessible.
This is corollary to my theory of why people should take it easy on the movie Hackers, which wasn't actually that bad in retrospect. When that movie came out, everybody was mad about it because for the crime of making them look cool, right? And like when the first MCU movie, when Iron Man came out, right? And to a lesser extent, Blade slightly before it, right?
Sure.
I guess the other one would be the first X-Men movie, right? And we were like, oh, this is a whole cut above like the Frigno Hulk and the horrible spandex Spider-Man and Captain America's. Wow, they made Iron Man. He looks real, you know? And so there is this thing you fall into where like, and I think it's dying, but like, I think there is a bullied to bully cycle.
Oh, absolutely.
It can happen where like, you can't come into the thing that I got gatekept into. This is my refuge. This is the last thing that you would let me do without coming in and giving me wedgies. So now I have power over something. I get to gatekeep it. And I was like, no, don't do that. Take the win. You win on the diet. You lost the weight. They're smiling at you now. Don't go, hey, you should have got in on the ground floor and curse yourself to be lonely. Take the win.
If you are the victim of bullying or, you know, gatekeeping behavior, what have you, don't just sit around and wait for your turn to be the bully. And there's so many people that do that. We are a society of turn takers. Look no further than gender reveal parties. Why the fuck are we doing this, people? We're causing fires, we're causing mayhem, they're bad for the environment, and they're a phenomenon that is like 10 years old. This is not a tradition. This is not a well-worn family tradition that everybody did. No, this is some people saw some shit on Instagram and said, we want to do that too. We have this thing where we see people who are quote unquote in power. I don't know. I'm digressing fully. But the point is, don't just sit there and wait your turn to be the oppressor. Break the oppression.
Yeah, just stop doing it. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's not like I've been in a day-long Twitter war with a guy that says that it's a horrible desecration of the source material and an insult to true fans that they made Fringella black on the Witcher because it's Polish and it should be like it was in the mind of the original Polish. You've never met him. For all you know, Geralt of Rivia looks like Idris Elba in his mind. You have never met the man. then they whip out like the, well, there is like there's like a country that they mention in The Witcher that would be to the south. Like there's Dorne in Game of Thrones. Why aren't the black dudes from there? Well, no, you don't just give them their own country like that. That's dumb.
Right.
And then you get onto the next onion layer is that they're like, the reason that's their expectation is whitewashing in the first place, because they think that there were no black people in Roman Italy, which is literally like a one-day boat ride from North Africa.
There's a reason that Caesar, Antony, and Cleopatra were all in the mix together, gang.
Yeah, the Ottomans took over half of Europe for 200 years. The Moors took over a third of Europe for 100 years. Like, I mean, people didn't hop on the Euro pass like they do now, but like, it's not like they saw a black dude and were like, get the pitchforks, you know?
But anyways, I think at the end of the day, my only real complaint with Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power, is that it's really not forging any new territory as a fantasy series. Like, I could have just as easily picked up House of the Dragon and been watching it. I didn't. And I'm liking this one, but it is really just the one that I'm watching. I don't see this bringing anything to the table that any other fantasy series isn't bringing, other than the license. But for what it's doing with the license, I'm not that angry about it. Like, I want more stories from Middle-earth. Why can't they play in Middle-earth? I don't get this. I just don't get it.
Guess you can't go back and watch the Lord of the Rings movies again. Man, come on. You just rewatched those, right?
Matt, I am here to make a confession this evening.
What's that?
I have seen the theatrical cuts of Fellowship of the Ring and the Two Towers. I have never seen any version of Return of the King, and I have not seen the extended editions of any of them.
You haven't seen Return of the King?
I have not seen Return of the King.
Okay. Stop what we're doing.
Oh, okay.
We're gonna stop and watch Return of the King right now. We'll be right back with you people through the magic of editing.
Yes, 3 hours later.
3 hours later.
Well, speaking
I'm just
of...
kidding. We didn't really watch it. We didn't even really stop.
No.
We played you all.
Well, let's switch gears here to a totally reasonable fan culture that has no toxic elements whatsoever. I recently watched Obi-Wan Kenobi, the recent Star Wars TV series.
It's been 10 years.
The fight is done. We lost.
Leave us alone, Ben.
When the time comes, he must be trained.
Like you trained his father?
It's my responsibility.
Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan.
I've loved you always.
stories.
There's a thing that swallows you. It holds you together while it's tearing you apart. It's terrifying.
The key to hunting Jedi.
They're coming.
This patience.
Jedi are cowards. They failed you. There is no point in protecting them.
Where is Obi-Wan?
Which, just as a quick capsule review, I liked it better than I liked Book of Boba Fett, which I did not hate. I didn't like it as much as I liked The Mandalorian, which I love. It was a real middle-of-the-road show. And, again, I got to sit down, I got to watch a Star Wars, several hours of new Star Wars, and it was fine. It's good. It didn't nail my hair to the wall, but it's fine, and that's what a TV show can be. Like, there can be middling content. And there's several things I liked about it. I like the fact that Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen are back. They're giving good performances. They're compelling performances, proving that their casting was not the pepper that spoiled the pot of the prequel films. So they're getting a little mulligan on that. About the only complaint I have is I'm getting really tired of the Skywalkers being a central part of my Star Wars stories. I understand Obi-Wan Kenobi was an A character in that whole thing. I understand he's closely tied to that story, but it's getting really hard for me to care about the next edition of the Skywalkers. And in this one, spoiler alert, I guess, series has been out for a while, but we have a person playing young Luke and young Leia. Two people, I guess. Playing young Luke and young Leia, and I don't want more Skywalker stories. Give me Obi-Wan, being a good guy for hire. I don't know, but that was my only complaint. And really, with this one, because it is Hayden Christensen, because it is Ewan McGregor, I'm like, yeah, I'll let him play with the Skywalkers a little bit more. But man, it's getting a little hard for me to care about that chapter of Star Wars. We have a whole universe to play in. Let's play some other directions.
I think all those series are starting to fall into the same formula problem. And to a lesser extent, it's the exact same thing that Rings of Power is fallen prey to, or you know, the Wheel of Time attempt. It's like they forget that they have to do a whole show, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're very stately, and they have this sort of luxury slow-paced fan service in them up front, and then like it gets to be like episode 3 and they're like, we better double the tempo of this because we're not getting done, you know. And that I kind of find to be to like the detriment of the show in general. It's what makes them all seem so weirdly like the last 3 Book of Boba Fetts probably just could have been a movie.
Well, and they would have been a Mandalorian movie.
yeah, and it would have been as good as it was, you know.
And I think if there has been a stumbling block in the Star Wars oeuvre of the Disney Plus series, Book of Boba Fett's probably it. I enjoyed it. I still like it. I still give it a thumbs up. I still give it my recommend. But it has some directorial problems. And folks, that breaks my heart to say, because I used to be a big booster for Robert Rodriguez, who directed several of those episodes. And they are the episodes I have a hard time with the direction on. Some of those speeder bike chases did not look right. And it was a directing thing. They looked like scenes out of Spy Kids, which is fine for Spy Kids. It didn't look great in a world where we've seen so many fantastic cinematography examples and directing examples in The Mandalorian. Just didn't seem to translate with Robert Rodriguez on that series. That being said, I think they were up against a pretty tall order. Everybody had their fantasy. Everybody had their idea of what was going to come next in the world of Boba Fett and what that story should be. And so you really weren't going to please anybody with that, which is why I think the last 3 episodes are more Mandalorian focused than they are Boba Fett focused. But at the same time, like, I watched them once. They were fine. I probably won't watch him again. There are some cool set pieces. I like to see a dude riding on a Rancor doing some King Kong shit. I like that. But overall, you know, it was, again, it's fine. It was middle of the road television.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying, is everything that needed to be in the Book of Boba Fett could have fit in four episodes, you know? That was its biggest failing.
Well, and then switching gears, keeping things Disney Plus, we've got the Marvel arm of things, which I think they kind of avoided some of those trappings. Like, WandaVision was pretty innovative for what it was doing and how it was doing it. I think it played with television as a convention and as a medium, and told a unique story to that medium. You switch gears to something like Moon Knight, which is another recent Marvel series that I've seen. And I liked Moon Knight. Moon Knight was fine. It had some problems where it wasn't tied in enough with the Marvel universe to keep me really slavering for it.
I can't tell the difference between my waking life and dreams. Day and
night. It must be very difficult. The voice is in my mind, in your head. There's chaos in you. Embrace it.
And I'm not a Moon Knight fan. I didn't read a ton of Moon Knight books going into this. I know very little about the character. And they did some interesting things directorially. They did some interesting things with consciousness and how that works. But it was almost to the detriment of the series because it meant a lot of the action happened off screen. A lot of the superhero action happened off screen. And it just kind of felt like its own thing, which is, again, fine. But, like, it was really odd to sit down in a Marvel series and not have them talk about Thanos, have them talk about the blip, have them talk about the Battle of New York. All of these things that they kind of weave into all of their properties. None of it is in Moon Knight. They didn't even have an obligatory episode where he goes in up against one of the B-list Avengers or anything.
Well, that's another example of what I'm talking about, because they sucked that reveal out so long, then they kind of had to rush the good stuff on the back. Like a couple, at one or two episodes of him like messing around, trying to figure out what his body was doing at night would have been more than sufficient. That did not need to be half the show.
Now, I did like the whole ancient Egypt angle on it. I liked the adventure archaeology angle on it. There was a lot to like there, but at the end of the day, like it didn't stick with me. It's just like, oh, that was fun. What's next? And as a result, I have not hopped on Miss Marvel or I guess it's Ms. Marvel, and I have not hopped on She-Hulk yet. You have?
Yeah, and I think you're missing on two of the funnest ones, actually.
Okay.
Because they're at least trying to work the formula differently, which I think is cool. She-Hulk in particular.
I met a guy, and I haven't heard from him. And it sucks.
That is not how we work through our issues.
Jen, you're a superhero.
Energy. I don't want to be a Hulk.
But there are upsides.
Your ass looks crazy right now.
This is the best date I've had in a while.
Oh.
She-Hulk Attorney at Law. Original series streaming August 18th. Only on Disney Plus.
So the She-Hulk series is based off Sensational She-Hulk. Like a couple of runs of it. And that was basically, they invented fourth wall breaking in an otherwise serious, well, semi-serious book for that, right? Because there was the Savage She-Hulk, and it was kind of like, not a dud really, but it was not their proudest moment. And it was kind of a like a put a she on the front of it, or a Mrs. behind it or whatever. You know, that was kind of a moment back then. It got shelved for years, and then someone said, well, why don't we relaunch it, and we'll put a lampshade on the fact that it's dumb that she was She-Hulk, and have her know she's in a comic. And they made this really fun book that ran for a couple of years. Point being, the alleged bad CGI is sort of in service to that art style. When she is hulked out, she's kind of like... And I'm not necessarily saying they did that this is part of the production design, right? But it works anyway because she's supposed to look out of place. It's a goofy conceit that this Hulk lady works in a regular law office, right? Like that's silly to begin with. And so it's allowed to look silly and feel silly in the show. It just ends up kind of working. Like, I didn't have big complaints with it. And the core cast of it is extremely winning. It's a pretty fun show, actually. And I can't say enough good stuff about Ms. Marvel. It's really fun.
But the reason I wanted to kind of lump all these together is it seems like to me that this is a much better place for a lot of these stories and a lot of these characters to inhabit is television. Is episodic television, is telling stories an hour, 45 minutes at a time. And I'm talking about your Star Wars. I'm talking about Lord of the Rings. I'm talking about Marvel. It's a hard, like, I did not go see Thor Love and Thunder, not from a lack of interest in seeing Thor. It's just these movies are so frequent and these TV shows are so frequent anymore. It doesn't feel like a priority to me anymore. What feels like a priority to me to go see a movie at a theater, to break quarantine, to drop that money, to have to arrange that, you know, somebody's going to be watching my kid, it's going to have to be something pretty special. And I don't know that the next Marvel movie is enough to get my butt in the seat anymore. And it's to the point where, like, you look at something like The Eternals, where they have derivated on the story so much that it doesn't feel like a Marvel movie. Or a show like Moon Knight, where it's derivated so much it doesn't feel like a Marvel show. It's hard for me to get jazzed about that because it is so far afield. But then if it doesn't derivate enough and it's just another superhero in magic costume show, I don't like that either. And so Marvel is hitting a real weird niche where I'm like, man, maybe it's better that I catch these on streaming and they're no longer my theatrical priority anymore. I think that's a better place for them to live. How is it hitting you?
It kind of feels like you're saying that you're picky.
I'm saying that ever since I had a kid, my movie viewing time is at a premium. And if I am going to be breaking away, it's got to be something good or something with the potential to be good. And right now, I just have not seen the thing from Marvel that's just going to drop my jaw and blow my mind.
How old does a kid have to be before they cost money to take to the theater?
I believe 3, which is to say we have snuck the kid into the theater a couple of times. His first movie, and this is going to make me sound like a huge hypocrite, but his first movie in a theater was Spider-Man No Way Home. His second movie in a theater was Jackass Forever.
Nice, that'll learn him good.
But yeah, I would much rather catch these stories on streaming. And if I'm going to do that, let's lock and load for a 6-episode or a 9-episode run. Why not? But tell me a good story over those 9 episodes.
I mean, that's kind of why I liked Ms. Marvel, because like it was not perfect. It was a very, like, it had a kind of strange time travel-y plot that threw a lot at you. But it presented like a different structure. And like the family dynamic with the strict parents actually, like, it starts in a stereotype lane and then gets really interesting by the end, where they turn out to be actually very, very supportive and have depth and have reasons for their overprotective tendencies that get revealed and talked about and are actually part of the plot. So I thought the way that was all handled, and it's another show, and I've been noticing lately that there's a whole, finally some stuff coming out where they don't cast 35-year-olds to play kids. So, like, these kids seem like they are in high school, and thus, you know, the conceit of, like, well, Peter Parker makes dumb decisions because he is, in fact, 15 and should not be fighting the Rhino. You know, that actually kind of, that works correctly here. And so, like, I just thought it was light but still had things to say. It showed, like, it had that in common with, like, Enter the Spider-Verse, where it really showed living in the city, living on the East Coast, from the point of view of someone who actually likes living there. And it didn't have as much, like, urban blight porn as a lot of the you know, the Gotham-y, like, there's a million stories in the Naked City and they all involved a stabbing, you know. There's not as much of that in this. Kamala Khan likes where she lives, and they have some interesting visual motif where they incorporate her constant texting because she's, you know, one of them kids that won't put her phone down. And they incorporate that, like, into the signs as she's walking by, and it's, you know, the next text that she's getting is written in shoe polish on the storefront in the window when she walks by the deli. It's very visually dynamic. It's fun to watch. Miss Marvel is a stretcher in the comics. She has very Mr. Fantastic powers. And as we've seen through several adaptions, that can be really weird to bring to the screen. And they sort of like chose this visual style where they do it with energy. Her power is actually complicated in the books. Hard to explain and hard to bring to the television. And I didn't know how they were going to do it. But they do it in a neat visual way that isn't comical or gross, which is what as soon as I heard they were doing the show, I was like, oh, they're not really gonna have her like stretch on screen with the long arms. That's weird. Because in the comics, she also, like, when she's learning, she has imperfect control, so like she gets stuck with like giant hands for like a day, you know. And I'm like, they can't do all of that on screen. Like it would look like that old the hey, get out the way video for Ludacris, you know.
Yeah,
back in the day. But no, it was really fun, and you should watch it when you get a minute. It's a good one.
I will say that I think, speaking to this whole thing, the one Marvel property I've seen, and it's not strictly Marvel, it's one of the co-productions with Sony, the one trailer that I've watched that's like, oh, I might like to get to a theater for that, is the new Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, you gotta go to that in a theater. Come on.
But yeah, I think that's going to wrap things up here at the Nighthawks Diner. Thank you for joining us. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and find us on NighthawksPodcast.com. Matt, do you want to send us out?
You should probably go to bed because it is almost morning.